Today's episode is sponsored by the new film, If, out in theaters on May 17th. From writer and director John Krasinski comes the story of Bee, a curious young girl with the power to see everyone's imaginary friends, or ifs, and her quest to reunite forgotten ifs with their kids. Audiences of all ages will know and love the cast, which includes the likes of Steve Carell, Maya Rudolph, and the late, great Louis Gossett Jr. After watching the trailer, I am so excited to see all the ways kids imagine their ifs. Celebrate the magic of imagination and take the whole family to the movies to see If, out in theaters on May 17th. Today's episode is sponsored by Greenlight. Did you know that 27 states don't require a personal finance course for students, even though teens score an average of 64% on the National Financial Literacy Test? Let's make a difference. Our friends at Million Bazillion and Greenlight are hitting the road, visiting schools to teach important lessons on financial literacy. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live and interactive. Million Bazillion Live is in partnership with Greenlight, the money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That's greenlight.com/million.
You're listening to Brains On, where we get curious about the science of everything.
You're listening to Brains On. I'm your host, Molly Bloom, and I'm here with one of our producers, Mark Sanchez. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Molly. Hey, I want to play a word association game with you, okay?
Okay.
So when I say word, you just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind.
Okay.
Butterfly.
Caterpillar.
Wasp.
Sting.
Parasitoid.
What is a parasitoid?
You don't know what a parasitoid is?
I do not.
You know what a parasite is, right?
Yes, a parasite.
Parasite.
Is an organism that lives in or on another organism. That's the host.
Host.
And they use the host as a source of food, shelter. They're super fascinating.
Totally. And the difference between a parasitoid and a parasite is that a parasitoid will always kill its host. Parasites don't always do that.
Hi, I'm Carl. I'm a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, and I study tiny little wasps that lay their eggs in other insects. They're called parasitoid wasps.
That's our biologist pal, Carl Stanoyan.
All right, Carl. I met him at the Monarch Butterfly Lab at the University of Minnesota when we were working on our Monarch episode. If you haven't heard that one yet, check it out.
For sure, check that out. It is quite a fascinating journey to Mexico and back. And those tiny little parasitoid wasps that Carl studies use monarchs as their hosts. They feed on the chrysalis of a butterfly.
Chrysalis? I think I need a little refresher.
The chrysalis.
Chrysalis.
Or pupa.
Pupa.
Is that stage in a caterpillar's life that comes after crawling on leaves and before flying off on new butterfly wings.
Pupa is a funny word.
This robot is easily distracted.
Also, the plural of pupa is pupae. Pupae is a funny word. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, robot.
Apologies.
During chrysalis, a caterpillar forms a protective shell around itself so it can go through its transformation to a butterfly. Now, monarch butterflies eat milkweed, which provides them with a natural defense. Milkweed is toxic to parasitoids like wasps.
So the monarch would be poisonous if the wasp ate it?
True, but there's one type of wasp that Carl studies that seems to be immune to these milkweed toxins.
All right, so this wasp, Pteromallus cassotis, P-T-E-R, like a pterodactyl, it means wing. Pteromallus cassotis is its name, and we really don't know much about it at all, except that we know it will lay its eggs in the chrysalis of certain butterfly species, and it seems like it might be specialized on monarch butterfly chrysalids.
So when these wasps lay their eggs, what you get at the end of the chrysalis isn't the beautiful butterfly you would expect.
Instead of 2 weeks later a butterfly emerging, you'll have 100 wasps emerging instead. One female will somehow find a chrysalis in the wild, and she'll spend about maybe a day or two laying eggs into it. There's not much a pupa can do to defend itself because it doesn't have any limbs or any teeth and it can barely move. And once it hardens up, it's kind of just a sitting duck. Sometimes we find more than 200 offspring from one chrysalis.
Molly, do you want to hear something crazy about these parasitoid wasps?
You mean more crazy than hundreds of wasps feeding off a chrysalis and flying out when I expected to see a colorful butterfly?
Right. Okay. Another crazy thing about these parasitoid wasps, there are more species of these wasps than all of vertebrates combined.
So more than birds, plus fish, plus amphibians, plus mammals?
Yep. Combined.
That's a lot of wasp species.
Don't worry, I'm not trying to scare you.
Too late.
These things have been around since before we even kept records, and they haven't overtaken us yet.
Attack of the parasitoids.
Robot, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay, my point is that there are so many different species of parasitoid wasps, they can be hard to identify. Tiny differences in size and color and shape can be tough to detect, but they're important.
So how did Carl do it?
This is where his detective work started. The lab that he works in was trying to figure out what might be killing monarchs during the chrysalis stage. So they found them in the wild and brought them back to the lab.
And then?
And then they waited.
Almost luckily, we had one instance of parasitism that first year of the study. And we said, let's go to the books, look it up. It looks like this really common wasp that's used in biological control, Pteromallus puparum.
But they had to be sure. So they took the next step.
We sent it to the Smithsonian. They have a large collection of insects to compare it to. And they responded, yeah, it probably is Pteromallus puparum. We're not 100% sure, but let's go with that.
For some people, being close to 100% sure, that'll do. But for scientists, not quite.
Then we dug into some really old literature and found a paper from 1888. There was this one record of monarch hosts being parasitized by this one wasp. Then we looked a little closer at the catalogs and realized there were a few differences, like the color of the legs were slightly different and things like that. And so then we realized that not Pteromallus puparum, we actually have this other species, Pteromallus cassotis, that no one's paid attention to in over 100 years.
So nobody had seen this wasp since 1888. That's pretty amazing.
I know. It had been so long that people had actually forgotten all about it. Can you imagine looking at this little teeny wasp that's about as big as a grain of rice, and you're the only person who knows it exists? Think about that for a second.
That is bananas.
Bananas indeed, Robot.
Every time I learn something new that nobody else has ever learned, it's a huge rush. I love it. It's a super exciting feeling, and I can't really describe it.
That was Carl Stanoyan from the University of Minnesota Monarch Lab. Thanks for bringing that story to us, Mark.
You're welcome.
And thanks, Robot.
My pleasure.
Do you have any questions for us about parasites, robots, anything else? Send them to us at brainson@m.org. Right now, we're working to find an answer to this question from 6-year-old Rupert Kong from Toronto.
How do volcanoes erupt?
Did you catch that? He said, how do volcanoes erupt? We'll have an answer for you very soon. Until then, send us your questions. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at brains_on. And there's one more thing we need to take care of before we sign off. It's time for the mystery sound. We've been asking you to send us your mystery sounds, and it's been fun hearing what you've come up with and trying to guess the answers. They're pretty tricky. We're going to see if you have an easier time guessing this one than we did. Ready? Here it is.
My name is Bert Turtle. I'm 6 years old, and the sound of that was going down a hill at like 25 miles per hour. Basically, sledding. What also sounds like to me is a friction piano. It's like a bunch of notes at the same time, and it sounds like a full melody. Like they're just all playing at the same time.
Thanks, Bear, for sending that really cool sound, the sound of sledding. I don't know what a friction piano is, but it sounds like a cool invention. Good idea. If you have a mystery sound you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear it. Just send it to brainson@npr.org. We'll play some of the sounds we get on an upcoming episode. That's it for now. You can always listen to past episodes at our website, brainson.org, or at your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.
Brains on.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.